And now, the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the Last Word on Habs podcast, holiday edition. I'm Connor LaPalme, and as always, I'm joined by Johannes Wielden. How's it going, Johannes?
Season's greetings, Connor.
Thank you to you as well. I trust you had a very good Christmas.
We had a wonderful Christmas. We stayed home. We avoided family drama on either coast. We made our own traditions. We skated on the pond every single day. Kids are becoming quite the aggressive little hockey players. It was absolutely perfect. And I know for some people the holidays are a great time. For some people it's a stressful time. For some people it's a kind of a sad time. But all is well from Central Vermont. That's my report.
Sounds like a lovely little Christmas you have. I have the luxury of having a lot of family close, so it's a little bit more hectic over my way. So Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, we're kind of always on the go. We're a little bit worried because, you know, Daniel's 1 year old and sleeping can be a challenge, but he was a little trooper and he was no problem at all, which was good for us and made us look like championship parents because he was, you know, not fussy, slept well. We were able to put him down places. He was able to come home and go to bed, so
that's great.
We were happy. And on top of that, I think because it was his first, like, real Christmas, not that last year didn't count, but, you know, he was a week old.
Yeah.
He got a little bit spoiled. I think we can open up a toy shop now because we have so many toys. But, we had a good Christmas as well.
Very good. Very good. I'm glad to hear it.
You had probably had a more calming and relaxing Christmas, but we still had a good one, so.
Yeah, we do this thing every 3 years where we stay home and do our own family thing. That was the plan anyway, but we haven't really been able to do that for the last little while. So despite many protestations to the contrary, we stuck up for our original vision and did some home stuff. But Connor, I know our listeners are very, very interested in all things holiday from our point of view.
Of course.
But many, at least some, tune in to hear our incredibly hot takes on the Montreal Canadiens. So what do you think? Year in review? Or wait, half year in review?
Yeah,
I guess it's the year in review.
Well, if we want to go all the way back to last year, sure.
I mean, well, it's the end of the year, so, you know.
There we go. We'll say the 2018 of the 2018-19 season review.
Well done.
So, I guess we can dive right into it quick if you want to start off with our we'll call it the first half MVP, even though it technically isn't the first half. I got a couple of names on here just in case. Like, I like to be prepared because I don't want us to double up. But I'll let you start if you have your first half MVP.
Sure. I have to go with Max Domi. In terms of his performance, in terms of the player that he was in Arizona and what he's found in Montreal, he's become a leader of the team, not through big talk, but just by his play on the ice. And as surprised as I am to say it, I think Montreal won the trade, at least so far, for Alex Galchenyuk. I think Galchenyuk is still an incredibly offensive-minded talent, and I think his best days are ahead of him. But for what Montreal needed, Max Domi has fit the bill, and he has emerged as a true leader on this team. And for that reason, at the halfway mark of the 2018-2019 season, Domi is my MVP.
Yeah, I had him on my list too. I mean, it's hard not to. He leads the team with 35 points, almost running at a point-per-game clip. You know, he slowed down a little bit, but that's okay. He's still, you know, finding a way to contribute and be effective on the ice. I had him as my top dog as well for the first half. He was, you know, again, I think he surpassed everyone's expectations. I mean, I thought I would say the most optimistic of Habs fans thought he would be good. You know, he'd be a feisty player in the mold of like a Brendan Gallagher, which he is. But I don't think they were expecting him to have this kind of point production, which is, hey, you know, and it's a good thing for the Habs. You know, I think it's kind of launched them into the sort of the start they've had this first half of the season, which I think, if we want to get to it a bit later, has been relatively surprising for most. But, yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with Max Domi. I'm going to just veer off because I like, you know, I don't want to have us, you know, talking about the same thing over and over. Well, I'm going to throw it to Jeff Petrie, actually.
I like that call. I like that call a lot.
He's got 27 points, leading the team in defensemen. I think he's up there in the NHL as well for points per defenseman.
Yep.
You know, when Shea Weber wasn't there, he played, for the most part, very, very well as the team's number one defenseman, and he's sort of kept his play up. I'm not saying his game, and he's not without warts, but I think even if you want to bleed back to last season, he was one of the kind of bright spots after Weber went down. And he's having a very strong season, and you know, it's hard to, you know, he was for a while before Weber came back the kind of stabilizing force on the defense. I wouldn't say, no one would argue that Tabs' defense is you know, all world or even very good, but Petrie was the, you know, Petrie stood out for the first part before Weber came back, and even now that Weber's back, Petrie seems to have found a way to keep his game at a high level, and so for that, I think you know, he's the first half MVP.
I like it. I like it a lot. I was thinking about this the other day, and I'm not sure you'll agree entirely with this characterization, but in some ways, Montreal this year really is built on cast-offs. Now, yeah. I don't think you can say that for Carey Price or Brendan Gallagher, but I mean, you go down the list, Tatar, Byron, Domi, Petrie, these are all players that couldn't make it elsewhere and have somehow come together and found a way to move forward. I mean, go down the list. I don't know what Riley's future is with this club, but Minnesota kind of gave up on him. It's just, yeah, exactly. Kulak, who couldn't find a stable home in Calgary. And like, it's just interesting to see. And maybe if we pulled back the layers, we'd see a lot of teams are built on players from otherwhere, yeah. But it just seems like Montreal more than ever is this sort of disparate brand of players from around the league who've come together and found themselves playing in Montreal, original six team, huge hockey market. There's nothing like playing in Montreal. Yeah, I don't know. So that and Jeff Petrie certainly fills that bill, and I think that's a great call in terms of a player who's played absolutely phenomenally and makes me wish I had taken him in my hockey pool because I'd be sitting pretty right now. Well, look, we've got a couple of exciting MVPs for the first half of the season. Who made your naughty list this year?
I might have a controversial one that I'm not sure if I want to pull the trigger on because I don't know if I want to sound like I'm hating.
I know exactly what you're going to say. But I'm go gonna ahead. Do it be anyway. Brave. Be brave.
Jonathan Drouin. And it is not because his point production, because he has 30 points. He's playing well. I just think, and I don't know if it's entirely his fault, I just think we were kind of sold on Drouin as a player that he's not. And I don't know if that's management's fault. But, you know, you're expecting Jonathan Drouin to sort of dominate games. He was supposed to, you know, spark the power play. And I haven't necessarily, I mean, he's fit in. Him and Max Domi have formed a very incredible pair. But I don't know what it is. I feel like Max Domi away from Jonathan Drouin would be fine. And I don't think it works the same. Like, I don't think Drouin would be fine without Domi, if that makes sense. And maybe I'm being too harsh, but based on what we were sort of told, Jonathan Drouin was supposed to be this offensive catalyst. You know, he was supposed to be. I feel bad, but like, the expectation of what he is supposed to be and what he is are so kind of, the gap is significant enough to me that even though he's having, I would say, a pretty good season, I haven't watched him. I haven't seen him dominate a game. I haven't seen him, you know, you see him maybe dominate a couple of shifts here and there, but he hasn't dominated a game. He hasn't taken over a game. He hasn't done a lot of things that are like, you know, kind of bring you out of your seat. You know, and it seems like a lot of times he tries to do that stuff and ends up going the other way with a turnover. And for that, I guess just maybe because my expectations were too high and for the lack of, you know, the power play is just so damn bad. I think he's my first half loser, which is, again, I know I'm being a little harsh, and maybe I have it out for Jonathan Drouin for some reason, but that's just how I feel. So that's that.
That's interesting. So I see where you're coming from, and I think one thing that I feel that you didn't mention, but that is kind of in line with your take, is that there are times when he does not skate fast back to the bench. There are times where he at least looks like he gives up on the play. Now, he's doing it less this year than last year, I think. I'm going to slightly disagree. Like, I wonder if part of the reason that both Domi and Drouin are having more success than either of them did last year is because they found this tandem that seems to fit and things seems to work together. When it comes to expectations, I guess I thought Drouin was going to be a little bit more like Domi, but with more scoring punch. And what I think we found is that he just doesn't have that level of grit. He's got incredible flair. And there are moments when he's skating down the ice that fans jump out of their seats, and it's hard not to do it at home because he's a catalyst for a certain kind of energy, but he doesn't bring it consistently. And so there are times when, as you say, he turns over the puck, when you want him to pass instead of shoot or shoot instead of pass on the power play, and he doesn't seem to make the right play. So it's a little bit strange to suggest the loser of the Montreal team is the second leading scorer. But I'm not going to give you too hard a time because I feel like I know where you're coming from.
And I guess maybe I'm trying to pull back the curtain a bit. I didn't sort of want to – like, we've been picking on the fourth line quite a bit. I don't know where you're going with your loser, but I felt it would have been too easy to pick someone like Delorier or Hudon, even though I had them on my list, just because – it's easy to pick someone who's kind of coming in and out of the lineup. You know, if they're playing once in every three games or, you know, two games in, one game out kind of thing, or it's, you know, they're not regulars. And I feel like the rest of the lineup up and down has kind of been what we expected from them. And again, I think just because, you know, again, I think maybe my expectations were high, even though when he was traded for, I had the concerns of, you know, in Tampa Bay, he had all kinds of offensive cover and, and he's coming here to be the guy. Can he handle it? Like, will he be able to do that? But I don't know. I guess maybe I'm being unreasonable, but I was expecting a bit more. And like I said, the way the power play has kind of floundered the last two seasons, it's quite disappointing.
So when I was thinking about this, I did initially have sort of Delorier and Hudon on the list and even Carl Alsner. But I mean, for the reasons that you suggested, it just didn't feel fair to call him out. I mean, I know Alsner's been called back up because of injury issues now. And I think we can expect to see him sort of go back and forth at least a little bit this season. He's going to be a serviceable NHL defenseman when times need. But I didn't really want to do the... Yeah, well, all that to say, I wanted to see more from David Schlemko. I thought he was brought in to be a top four defenseman, and I know that he's only played 18 games this year, but he's sitting on 2 points with a minus one. I guess I didn't know what I expected, but we were told he was going to be a serious contributor on the blue line for Montreal, and I haven't seen it. And he's injury prone. He missed all of last year and not much, but at least half of this year. It just seems like whatever they thought they were getting with him, they haven't really got it. And the more I think about the problems of Montreal, the more I look to that blue line and I see a weird mix of youth and inexperience and sort of age and lack of fleet of foot. There must be a better way to say that. But it's a strange mix of experienced and super slow and young and excitable, but prone to errors. And I kind of thought Schlemko might bridge that gap a little bit. He might be a little more mobile than some of the than a Ben or even a Weber, frankly. And he hasn't really been, and he hasn't really contributed very much. And for those reasons, I'm down on, I'm selling my Schlemko stock.
Yeah, and I think it's also a bit of the thing with Drouin where we were kind of sold, you know, a faulty bill of goods because, you know, Bergeron kept saying even though last year when they acquired him when he was hurt, he's like, oh, just wait for Schlemko. And then everyone's like, okay, I guess, you know, because he played in San Jose, you know, no one really kind of, not many people probably saw him play a lot and didn't know what he could do or not do, so everyone was kind of, you know, I guess a little bit excited when he finally to get him into the lineup, and then, you know, by all accounts he had an awful season last year, and then, you know, this year he had a promising preseason before he got hurt again, and now it looks like more of the same. And it's fair because again the expectations were not managed, I think, I mean, it's not often you trade a fifth-round pick for a defenseman and he comes in to be a top-pairing defenseman. It's, you know, it would be like San Jose kind of totally misjudged their player. Or, I guess, Las Vegas because they, you know, it was the expansion draft stuff. But, yeah, I agree. It's just interesting because I have a couple of buddies who, well, a friend of mine's brother kind of played hockey with Marc-Edouard Vlasic.
Uh-huh.
And in the summer, you know, he comes back here and they play in 3-on-3 leagues and stuff like that. And they play together. And he was, like, they were talking about Schlemko. And apparently, Vlasic was like, you know, he's just buried in our depth chart kind of thing. And he's actually, he was kind of, you know, pumping his tires and saying, you know, you're going to be surprised about how, like, what he could do. So when I heard that last year, I was like, okay, this is promising. But, you know, he's turned out to be more, you know, I guess a pumpkin and not a carriage or whatever you want to. You know, he hasn't really
pumpkin and not a carriage. Is that like is that a French saying that gets translated? Okay.
The clock struck midnight. I don't know. You know, he said he has all the skills to do the play well, and then it never worked. I don't know what I was going for with that. I'm tired.
Apropos of nothing, I just heard a saying that I thought you might enjoy, and it's actually a French saying, and it translates in English to combing the giraffe. It's when you are given like busy work that doesn't actually matter, but like you're meant to be doing it.
Okay, combing the giraffe.
Combing the giraffe.
Do you know how to say it in French?
Yeah. So there you go.
Anyway,
you learned something on this podcast too.
There you go. Anyway, and it's fair. I mean, like I said, I think part of it was the sell job of Schlemko from the management when they acquired him and expectations. And it's not fair to him, but the expectations weren't met, and I can totally. It's, you know, you could point out I think almost everyone on the blue line and point to them as a, you know, the first half loser or whatever, an MVP, whatever you want to call it. Well, that's it. Those are our first half winners and losers, or MVP, and I don't know what you want to call it, loser. I don't know what you want to, an MVP.
But so I've got a couple little controversial takes I want to run by you.
We like controversy on this podcast, so go for it.
Controversy one. Is Shea Weber just a bit of a goon?
A goon? Why do you say that?
Because he's constantly does these late hits where, like, he gets away with cross checks for no reason, or like late hits, or like, you know, he's got this reputation as someone who's tough to play against. And I've just been watching him play lately, and I'm just like, yeah, he's tough to play against because he's like a goon. Like, he'd get kicked out of my men's league if that's what the kind of stuff he did. He'd be the guy that nobody wanted to drink with in the parking lot, you know?
Fair enough.
What do you think of that?
Well, you got to be hard to play against for a reason, right? And part of it means you're heavy, you hit heavy, you hit hard, and you don't always follow the rules. I mean, Chris Pronger was probably one of the dirtiest players in hockey, and people, you know, he's in the Hall of Fame. So, you know, it's part of hockey, you know, I guess. I don't know if he's a goon. I mean, he brings more than just, like...
Yeah, he's more skilled than your traditional goon. I think that's absolutely right, but he's goonish.
Ogre. He's an ogre. He's an ogre with a wicked shot. And you know what? And I think I agree with that, and I think... You know, that stuff kind of gets, once the player like that's on your team, you kind of forget about it and don't care about it.
Well, that's what I was going to say, right? Like, everyone hates Brad Marchand when he gets in people's faces and does that stuff. And yet, you know, Gallagher's not the same player, but sometimes he kind of is the same player, right? He's got that little smile and he goes to the net. But of course, on Montreal, we love it. We love when he does that.
I think Marchand is maybe an extreme example because I think I know people that like Boston that kind of get tired of his, when he's not doing the extra stupidities like licking people and biting hands and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I understand because he's a very talented player. And I know
he is.
To be that player, he needs to be edgy. But when he goes over the line in those stupid ways, it's kind of like, you kind of put your hands and be like, what are you doing? Whereas I think Gallagher doesn't necessarily cross over that far. I think Marchand is the more talented player, but I prefer Gallagher just because he doesn't have the same kind of like weird antics in a scrum, at least that we've heard about.
I hear what you're saying. I think the general point is,
well, I'd be like,
we're okay when our players go over the line a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's sports, right? I mean, that's fandom. But I mean, exactly. I think yeah. when Milan Lucic was good in Boston, he was a player I'm like, I hate him, but I would love to have him.
You almost did.
He was going good.
Montreal almost did.
Thank God.
Thank God they dodged that bullet.
When he was going good in like 2011, 2010, that time, you know, I hated to play against him because I wanted to see him someone punch him in the face. But I was like, Montreal needs that guy.
All right, so back to the ogre talk. This is a bit of a hot take, and feel free to disagree with me. But what I think is going to happen with the reason I bring up the late shots, I think that is the next sort of thing that refs are going to start targeting. Because I don't know if you pay attention to the 31 Thoughts pod or read, you know, the Friedman stuff, but there's been a lot of talk this year, especially about how tough it is to play defense. And this goes along with things we've talked about, you know, making the goal pads smaller and really prioritizing offense wherever possible. And the idea is that to make games exciting, fans want to see goals. We're not going back to the New Jersey Devils 1-0, double overtime extravaganza bonanzas. We want to see 7-5 games. We want people to get excited. That requires that refs start calling that extra shot in the defensive zone. And what makes me a little bit worried about Shea Weber is not necessarily his speed. I don't know that he's ever been super fast. Not the fact that, you know, he was looked like a pylon a couple weeks ago and turned inside out by was it Barkov? Who was it? Oh no, what's the Carolina top draft pick?
Svechnikov.
Yeah, awesome. So what I think it's going to be though is that players of that ilk are simply going to be sort of priced out of the game because they will not be able to get away with those kinds of shots. And I don't know if it's going to happen this year, but I'm making a bold prediction that people can feel free to harass me later about. But I think we're going to see less of that stuff. And I think that's going to mean being hard to play against is not going to be the asset that it once was.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I always kind of get annoyed with these. Even after the whistle stuff, I find it can be a little stupid. You know, like, you know, guys, I know what you're saying. Like, if the puck's gone and you get big hits, I kind of get annoyed with that. And I especially, like I was saying, after the whistle, I find some of the stuff that happens. Like, after every whistle, someone's getting, you know, punched in the head or getting a shot or whatever, and they just sort of let it go. I think if you're two-pronged, if you want to be more offensive, I agree, you're going to have to start calling more things penalty-wise. I mean, part of that is having the refs actually enforce them properly and not, you know... You know, like sometimes the refs get too caught up calling ticky-tack stuff and let really serious stuff kind of go, which has been bothering me for a long time, you know. The little hook on the wrist gets called every time, but I can punch you in the head and it's like, hey, boy, settle down, you know. So it's one of those, that's another conversation, I guess.
Well, it kind of fits into this, right? It's the broken windows theories of hockey. You know what broken windows is? So the idea that you, for those of you who don't know, the idea that if you focus on the small things, the small signs of disorder, you're going to minimize the big signs of disorder. So you call those little slashes, it's going to make everybody play a little bit more intelligently and not sort of take those big penalties because you have this feeling that someone's watching and paying attention.
Yeah.
I don't know that that theory has proven itself to be a valid one in the context of the NHL, but that's kind of where, I don't know. I guess, for me, it's an open question still, but I do think you're going to have to be more careful on defense. Yeah. You're just going to have to, that extra, unless you are quick and can sort of put your body in between the player and the goal, trying to rub people out on the back on the side of the boards when there's no puck there is going to increasingly become dangerous for your team.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. I think, and to your point about Weber, I mean, I agree that, you know, if that he can't do that physical stuff that makes him more effective as a defender, then his value will plummet. I mean, if every time he wants to rub someone out, he takes a penalty. I mean, the Canadiens are kind of dependent on Shea Weber defensively, as we've kind of seen this year. If he's not on the ice, then that's a big problem for the team. I mean, I can think back to the series against the Rangers where, you know, Weber fought, I think it's JT Miller, and he kind of ragdolled him, and everyone was like, yeah, Shea Weber, that's why you don't mess with, you know, you don't mess chemists with the Canadiens anymore. But then he was off the ice for 5 minutes, and the Rangers scored a goal or two and tied the game. Excuse me. So, you know, the Canadiens need him on the ice, and if they're going to sort of change the rules to sort of mitigate those late shots, then yeah, he'll be off the ice more, and that'll be bad for the Canadiens.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's new rules. It's going to be a different approach to refereeing, and I think exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this leads me to my next sort of controversy, and that is that if you accept that that is going to be the new reality in the NHL going forward, then I think you have to accept that the window for the Montreal Canadiens to be, and we're not going to say a Stanley Cup winner, but a contender that is going, making a deep run, that window has got smaller, which means that we need to do some trade talk. We need to figure out how to shore up our defense and what we're willing to give up. Did you watch any of the Canada game last night against the Swiss?
I caught actually the last. I saw the beginning. I listened to it on the radio because I was coming back from somewhere, and then I caught the last half of the third period.
So I really don't want to give up Suzuki because that kid is exciting to watch. I mean, he can do with the puck is amazing.
And even Josh Brook, I know he played a very solid game. I know at the end of the game he made a really good play, where I think it was under a minute left, you know, the Swiss were pressing. They had the goalie out, and he got the puck in front, of, kind of like in the slot on his backhand, and instead of making a flimsy gets clearing attempt, excuse me, he kind of took it to the backboards and killed like 10 seconds, and essentially, you know, almost killed most of the game off at the end.
Just a smart play.
Yeah, you know, most of the time you'd see a kid, someone in that position would just try and flick the puck out of the, you know, out of the zone, and, you know, you know, especially off your back end, who knows if it doesn't fling into the stands, or if you just, you know, don't get enough wood on it and it's a feeble attempt that goes right to one of their players. Anyway, I think, yeah, they both look really good. I mean, Suzuki, I agree, was pretty much every time he was on the ice, something was happening, which I think is good. Unfortunately for him, I mean, he's not showing up on the stat sheet as much as, you know, his play would indicate, but you know, that's neither here nor there. He's still looking. He's probably the most dangerous. Apart from, I think, Maxime Comtois, he's the most dangerous player on Team Canada through the first two games.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like every shift he's creating opportunities. And even if they don't score, they are exhausting the defense and opening up opportunities for other teams. I mean, you know, Canada's... It's always interesting to see these early rounds because you get the ridiculous games like against the Danes, and it's going to be more interesting to see, you know, what it looks like against Russia, Sweden, Finland, those teams. But so I think about those players and I think, okay, well, both of those guys are going to get invited to camp next year. It's unlikely that either of them will make the team, but I would imagine I think both of them will get a shot playing NHL games. I don't think either of them makes the team next year. I'd be surprised. I could be wrong, but I'd be surprised. Yeah. So then you start thinking about, okay, well, where are we deep? And who would you be willing to give up that has value to shore up the defensive line?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, obviously you point to the wings at the NHL level. Montreal is very deep on wing. The thing now is they're all playing very well, right? So it's kind of...
Who would you not trade?
I mean, I don't think you can trade Gallagher.
Agreed.
I don't think the Habs want to trade Byron.
No, but that was a great pickup.
I think they could move.
I don't think you get the value that he's worth, though.
No, and I think for the Canadiens, he's sort of a Swiss Army knife. We've talked about before. We can sort of spot him all over the lineup, and he's not going to miss a beat.
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, you don't want to trade Domi right now. I mean, I know he's playing center, but he's a natural winger. Tatar. I mean, I think Tatar's a free agent at the end of the year. So it's tricky about who to give up at the NHL level. Prospect-wise, I think they're deep at center now because I think they, you know, I think they drafted 7 centers last year. I'm maybe exaggerating, but they drafted a lot of centers. It's tough. I was kind of looking through this because I know we kind of talked about trying to find, you know, trade, you know, teams to trade with and who do you want to give up. And it's tough because, you know, who do you want to give up at NHL level? You're going to have to give up one of Drouin, let's say, or Tatar. Sorry, he's not a free agent. He's got, after this year, he's got 2 more years.
With that. Oh, good. I'm really glad to hear contract. You say that. I was just checking that because so you had me scared.
Drouin, Tatar, Shaw, Gallagher, Domi. Byron Lehkonen, right? Out of those guys, I mean, who's the most valuable? Probably Domi, Gallagher, and Drouin are the top tier. Then Tatar, Byron, and Shaw are kind of that next tier, I think. And then, you know, Lehkonen, although we both think he's a good player, I don't think he's got the cachet and the value out there.
Agreed.
So it's kind of tricky that way. Like, do you want to give up one of your top... It's always the thing, right? You got to give up something to get something. But I think where the Canadians can sort of overcome that is that they have a ton of cap space moving forward, like this year and moving forward. And they might be able to leverage a team, let's say, like, and not that I want Jake Muzzin, but, you know, LA is a team that's near the bottom of the standings, and I think they're one of the, have the least amount of cap space. So you can take on a bad contract from the Kings and have, you know, sort of get yourself a sweeter deal that might not cost you as much in prospects because they want the relief versus the players.
But LA's rebuilding. I mean, they recognize that, right? They've got Valeno coming in probably next year. They picked up Sherbach. I don't know, you know, to what extent that's going to work out for him, but they're trying to go younger, faster.
I agree, but if you're the Kings, right, you have Kopitar signed long-term, Kovalchuk signed long-term, Dustin Brown signed long-term, and Jeff Carter signed long-term.
Yeah.
Those guys are all signed at least through... Kovalchuk's done in 2021. And the other, you know, Kopitar signed till 2024-25. So it's, you know, they have a lot of guys signed kind of long-term. So it's going to make it a little bit hard to sort of do that because these guys are all making, I think those four forwards are making almost over $20 million, again, almost $30 million actually against the cap.
Well, I can't see them giving up Kopitar. I can't see them get rid of Kovalchuk. I just don't. I don't know.
Brown has like very limited value, and it's Jeff Carter. I think
I like Carter. I like Carter, yeah. But I don't know but where he fits. And
well, you would play him at center, I guess, but you'd have to give someone up for the center.
Yeah,
I mean, where would you?
Who would I give up?
But do you push Domi to the wing and then you'd have, you know, Carter, Kokanyemi, and Danault? Because you don't want Kokanyemi to slide to fourth if you want to keep Danault. And Danault's not getting, you know, is not going to be part. Is not. I mean, he can be thrown in.
You talking about hat-trick Danault? Are you talking about hat-trick Danault?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
His stock has never been higher.
It's true. I just mean, though, like, you know, who's going to be that? You know, I know Dino's playing in a second or a 1B kind of role at the moment, but who's going to be, you know, who's the guy that's going to play the Thomas Plekanec role? You know, you don't want Kokanyemi to be that. I think everyone thinks he has a higher ceiling and more offensive potential, and, you know, he has potential to be a number one center. Unless you stick Carter on the wing, which, you know, it's feasible, but I think he probably, to this team, he would add more value in the middle at center. But, you know, you take Jeff Carter and Jake Muzzin, I mean, you're still gonna have to give up something, but the fact that you're offering the team relief, I think, is also part of the, you know, sweetening the deal.
Why I like that is that it becomes then a stopgap measure as your younger players are developing and getting ready, and then those are pieces that you could trade at the deadline in a couple of years, if not next year. Depending on what your situation is, and get some value back. So I like that idea, but my guess is that LA is trying to wait until the deadline and trying to drive up the price for those pieces for teams that are in the hunt. And I think Bergevin's move is to try to trade now before things get expensive, which they will in, you know, the next whatever 6 to 8 weeks.
It's like another team I was looking at is Edmonton, and they're in the start of the same boat. They have they don't have a lot of salary cap room. But the thing with Edmonton is, who do you want, right? I mean, they're not known as a defensive team. They were, you know, Bergevin did sort of swindle Jeff Petrie out of there. But, you know, the guy I would look at, I don't know if they'd want to trade him, would be like Oscar Klefbom. But I mean, besides the fact he's on the IR right now, you know, it's that's going to be a little bit more than, you know, we'll take a bad contract. And then, you know, you want to take on the contract of Milan Lucic. I don't think so.
I think the thing for me is that if you had asked me, you know, a year ago, I would have said we're rebuilding. We want picks. We want to develop our players. This is a 3 to 5 year plan to be a Stanley Cup contender. And where I sit right now, you have pieces that you didn't have. This is a team that's playing well. We don't have a blue line. It's not clear to me that the answer is in Laval, which means that you have to make a trade, and you have to make a trade with the view that if I'm right about Weber and the decline of the asset is not just because he becomes older and even slower, but because his style of play just will not work anymore. And if that's true, your window just got a lot smaller, which means that you're going to have to give up draft picks. You're going to have to give up players you don't want. Do I want to see Byron go? Absolutely not. But you know what? He rehabilitated his image. He should be in a position to get a good contract. He's a multiple 20-goal scorer. I definitely don't want to see Lehkonen go. But at the same time, if you had a good offer for someone who liked all the aspects of his game and you could get a young defenseman, doesn't have to be a star, but who's going to be a solid top four performer, I think you got to consider whatever it's going to take to set yourself up for in 2 years being a legit contender.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. And it's just, you know, it's funny. You know, I see some people writing things about who the Canadiens should target. And, you know, I see people throwing out names like before he was like, oh, Sherbak and Hudon. It's like, these guys aren't, like, I know they have, like, potential-ish, but they're not going to get you anything. No one's going to trade a top, like, even if you wanted to get Duncan Keith out of Chicago, which is not something I recommend, but you know, the Blackhawks aren't gonna trade Duncan Keith for, you know, Charles Hudon and a second round pick. I'm sorry, that's just not how it works. So you know, it's like you gotta give to get, and I'm going on a rant, but you see that a lot with Montreal fans where they want to give up the spare parts on the team for, you know, maybe I wouldn't say Duncan Keith is an elite NHL defenseman anymore, but he's still, I think, good enough.
Yeah, he and Weber could be like the geriatric line.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were the top pairing for Team Canada at the 2014 Olympics.
Yeah, well,
yeah, so
the in you know past. back to the future, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So, that leads to me to my third controversy, and this is sort of, you know, I think lends credence to where I'm suggesting they need to go in terms of trade now mentality and build for the next 2 years, not the next five. And that is Carey Price, who has, I mean, look, a shaky start to the season, rebounds a little bit, and now we are told yesterday morning he got injured at practice and he's not going on this road trip. So there's a couple threads here. I know he's expecting a second child. I know that I didn't see the actual footage from practice. Someone had suggested that it was a knock on from the Tkachuk interaction. Oh, yeah. A couple of weeks ago. I don't, do you have any more information about that? Just factually?
No, I don't. That's what I heard people saying. It might be from the Tkachuk thing, which makes sense because it was an awkward play. But then if you look, then why was he playing? Why did he play the last four games?
Right. He and you know, he played a back to back, which was even stranger because if he was, you know, but, you know, we've seen this before with Montreal. I don't know that Price has always been as open as he might be about whatever injuries he's facing. And, yeah, you know, the Montreal Canadiens have not yet won the Transparency Award in the NHL. Yeah. So despite many, you know, protestations to the contrary, we're still mostly in the dark about what's going on. What, you know, I've said this before, and so if you're listening to this and rolling your eyes in the back of your head, I feel your pain because, you know, I don't like stating myself over and over. But I don't believe that in 2019 you can pay a goaltender over $10 million and be competitive. I just don't – that's not the way that the league is trending. And so what I think that means is that Price, given his previous injury history, given the fact that he just looks shakier, despite the fact I agree he's had the last 6 weeks or so, he's looked a lot better. I think this means the window is smaller again. And so what Bergevin's done, and you and I were both very critical of Bergevin last season, and going into this season, we still felt there were a lot of question marks. What he has done is bought himself some time.
Yeah.
And so the question is, can he build a contender in the next 2 years, given the list of declining assets, given the concerns we have about price, given the way that the game is changing? And so I want to hear some takes from you on Carey Price's first half of the 2018-2019 season.
Well, I think it's you find it hard to find someone that would sort of defend the way he played to start the season. It kind of felt like the way he started the season before, which wasn't very good, and which, you know, left a lot to be desired, especially, you know, even though people know how I feel about complaining about what an athlete makes, you know, he did sign that big contract, and that was an easy thing to point to, as to, like, you know, kind of what you were saying, how can you pay this guy all this money and he's not, you know, he's not performing. But he was able to find his game, which I think is a good sign for the Canadiens. You know, they were able to sort of float. They were able to get by with Price not playing at his best, and they were able to sort of outscore teams, which is, you know, was the last time we were able to say that about the Montreal Canadiens. But, you know, now that he's found his game, I think it's very disappointing that he's gotten hurt again, and I think that's the problem now moving forward. Carey Price is a little... Not, I hate using the word injury-prone, but, you know, he tends to get hurt. His body... I don't know if his body can handle the full season. And I think part of it is because, especially early on in his career, he was facing so many shots and so much, you know, he had a lot to do because the team necessarily wasn't always the best. And they would survive because Carey Price would keep them in games. And I think all that catches up with you. And I think it's caught up with Price a little sooner than most people had hoped it would. And, you know, now you're in this boat where you think, you know, how many games will he play? Ever. You know, well, not ever, but every year you're kind of wondering, when is the other shoe going to drop? When's he going to be hurt? When's he going to miss some time? You know, maybe this is an injury. Maybe it's he tweaked something in that Tkachuk thing. Maybe it's just the team trying to give him a little bit of a rest. You know, I think if it was about, you know, because his wife is expecting, I think if it was that, they would just sort of say it. I would think that would be reason enough. People would understand that if his wife was about to have a baby, yeah, it's okay. You don't have to travel to Florida. But, you know, it's weird because, yeah, the contract's never going to go away for most people. And the fact that he's a little bit delicate, which I don't think is necessarily the right thing. But you know what I mean? You know, his knee's always bucking him now. And if it's not, now he's got a groin problem that can, if it doesn't heal properly, he's going to be with him the rest of the year. You know, those groin injuries tend to nag with athletes. So, it's just disappointing because he was finding his game, and now you hope he doesn't come back, not rusty, but, you know, you hope he doesn't sort of have a regression in terms of his play after this injury. And you hope he's not on the shelf for 6 months either, right? Because that wouldn't be the first time where the Canadiens say he's out for a little bit, and then, a little bit more, and a little bit more, and then, oh, it's the season. So, you know, it's a little disappointing, but they'll have to push through. It's just too bad that Anthony Emme seems to have... Like, he was, last year was very solid, but this year seems to be a lot more iffy. So it could really dent the Canadiens' chances if, you know, you're hoping they make the playoffs.
Yeah. And it's been an interesting year just for goaltenders in the league in general. I mean, exactly. I think a lot of players that we thought were going to be able to be sort of leading in goal really haven't. And some surprises have emerged. So it's kind of strange more than anything, and I don't know, you know, again, I don't know if it's the equipment changes, I don't know if it's the fact that defending has qualitatively changed, and so goaltenders are facing more and different kinds of shots. So, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about the fact that every winger now has their own shooting coach, and, you know, they're all practicing this, you know, this little... dangle that turns into a shot, you know, and the bringing it into their body and then twist it out so you can never really tell where the shot's being released from. You know, when you combine with these new sticks that when they're not shattering can fire those pucks at ridiculous speeds. It's just hard to see the way forward. I think that what we're going to have to wrestle with is whether Montreal is going to need another goaltender, and whether we're going to see Lindgren up sooner rather than later to at least give him some ice time facing NHL shots. Because, you know, that's one thing we hadn't talked about when it comes to trade. There has been a lot of interest in Lindgren from other teams, and whether he is the centerpiece of a future trade, it seems to me, if I thought that was a good idea last year, I'm not sure I think it's a good idea any longer. Only because I think our, as well as prices paid the last 6 weeks, I think for all the reasons you've mentioned, we have to be a little less secure than we would like to be about goalie in Montreal.
Yeah, and I think Lindgren, it's, people were saying, like, I think the Islanders were interested in him, if I remember correctly. The thing is, with Lindgren is the Habs like him, so that's gonna, it's gonna be a significant return. Which, you know, if you're in the camp of getting a defenseman, then maybe you could flip Lindgren for someone good. But I don't know. It's interesting. Lindgren, I think they could bring him up, but I think he's hurt right now, which is why they brought up McNiven. So that'll have to be put on hold for now. But if they're not gonna play Niemi, I think they should bring up Lindgren. And if they, you know, if Price needs a break, or, you know, if you don't want to play the next 60 games or whatever, you need to have someone who you can trust to play in nets.
Yeah.
To give Price a spell.
Yeah, so it sounds like things are coming off the rails over on your end. So I'm about to have two little kids squawking at me in 2 seconds here too. Why don't we just look at the week ahead? Tonight we got Florida at 7 p.m. We're recording on Friday morning. Tomorrow night in Tampa Bay. Got to imagine one of the toughest games they've played all year. And then Monday against Dallas, where they laid an egg a couple weeks ago. So how do you imagine this weekend back? Will the Canadians be slow and sluggish on turkey, or will they be looking forward to the new year and excited to end with a bang?
Well, I don't know. This trip is always, especially after Christmas, it's always interesting. You know, like, they should go into Florida and probably handle Florida, but, you know, who knows? I feel like they're going to go 1-2. I think they're going to go 1-1-1, if that makes any sense. I think they're going to probably beat Florida. I think they're going to lose to Tampa in a shootout or an overtime, just because they play them tight all the time now. And I think Dallas, they're going to just, it's New Year's Eve, they're going to just, you know, they're going to crap the bed. You know, I think they're going to be looking at, you know, just, I don't have a good feeling about that game. It's one of those things where I think, like, Jamie Benn's going to score a couple goals and Tyler Seguin is going to be dominant. And yeah, so that's my feeling on the week. You?
I would be surprised if they played well tonight. I'm going to be paying attention to tomorrow night because I think Tampa Bay is the best team in the league right now. Yeah. And it's always good to see how Montreal gets up for Saturday night game against the best in the league. I have a similar feeling about you for Monday night in Dallas. I just don't like the, I have a bad feeling about it. But if they can go 1-1-1, I'd be happy with that to end the year. That would put Montreal at 20-14-6 going into the second half of the 2018-2019 season. And hey, let's hope that that's where they're sitting. Puts them on pace for a 40-win season, which might be enough to squeak into the playoffs. So more for us to talk about.
Exactly. So for now, this is our bonus holiday episode. I'm Connor LaPalme signing off. Johannes, I hope you have a great new year. And to all the listeners, I hope you also have a happy and a safe new year.
I like it. Keep your stick on the ice, Connor.
Bye.
This has been the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Join us next week. Until then, see you on the ice.